Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Can we get serious now?
One thing that did happen during the 60s was some music of an unusual or experimental nature did get recorded and did get released. Now look at who the executives were in those companies at those times. Not hip young guys. These were cigar-chomping old guys who looked at the product that came and said, I don't know. Who knows what it is? Record it, stick it out of it, sells, all right. We were better off with those guys than we are now with the supposedly hip young executives who are making the decisions of what people should see and hear in the marketplace.
Success in the music business begins with a dream, a vision. This podcast will give you, the listener, the insight and tools to turn that vision into a reality. Meet the industry professionals who work day by day behind the scenes, helping to make those dreams come true. Welcome to the business side of music.
In the studio with us today, Nathan Dose, who is the president of AGD Entertainment. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
We got a press release from your publicist recently who was telling us about that you have a couple programs going.
Yeah.
And one of them we're going to talk about, obviously, is the top five things every developing artist needs to know. So we're going to talk about that one.
Sounds fun.
And then we're also going to talk about your first ever 0 to 60 scholarship. The program that's designed for developing 16 to 20 year olds, right?
Yeah. Now the scholarship is the new development. The 0 to 60 program has been offered through our company for the last six going on 7 years. And we are excited to be offering a scholarship for that program this year.
Well, so, good. Well, yeah. we're gonna talk about that in a minute. But the question we always ask everybody that's on the show is, how did you get started in the business? Were you a musician or?
Yeah, great question. I was a touring artist for, say, 10 years. Started at 17 years old, started a band, and by 19 was touring pretty regularly and ended up in Nashville by around 26, 27 years old. And cut a record here. So it was the band that brought me here. And quickly after moving here was when I kind of started to see some of my skill sets a little better suited for the management side and working with the artist than being the artist myself.
Was that something you just came across naturally?
Well, I think, I'm from a small town in Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, which is a college town, and we didn't have a lot of access to the music industry or music industry professionals. So, our community of musicians, really, we all tried to learn a lot and learn from each other, and I took to learning all of the music business stuff, not only for myself, but kind of for our community of artists in town. And so our group was pretty self-sufficient. We knew how to get our music into TV and film. We knew how to tour. We knew how to register our songs for, performance royalties.
How did this all come about? I mean, it's because you said there really wasn't formal programs per se. Was this something you did through Google searches? Or
we had a manager out of Albuquerque, which was unique. Just to have representation in Albuquerque. And she got us a lot of opportunities. And through working those opportunities, I wanted to make sure that we were doing everything kind of properly. So, Don Passman's book is still widely acknowledged as being kind of the Bible on the business, right? And so reading everything you need to know about the music business got me really like, what goes into contracts and what goes into royalties and how does all that work? And so that interest mixed with the opportunities that our manager were getting us, I wanted to make sure that we were doing everything by the book. So we were registering our songs properly for royalties with CSAC. And that came from a meeting with CSAC at South by Southwest that was, hey, meet these guys and learn about what they do. And so I just kind of was a sponge. I kind of took everything in. So, where I think a lot of artists would be like, oh, great, they do something for us. I was like, what is it that you do? And why do you do that? And what does that really mean for me? And wanting to know the ins and outs of it. And I don't think I realized that that was not how every artist operated in those situations. I think a lot of artists are like, great. Yeah, they do some stuff for us. We're not sure what, you know.
And that's a conversation I think we've had with a lot of artists over the years, especially the aspiring, up-and-coming young indie artists who, well, I know who these people are, but I don't necessarily know what they
what
are.
What they do and what they're for.
And, of course, then the whole sharks things come out because, you know, this business is full of sharks. It sounds to me like you got through it fairly unscathed.
Oh, no. I would say the opposite. A large portion of why we offer the program the way we offer the program is because of having a pretty unfortunate experience where we were taken advantage of for a decent chunk of money. Taken advantage of might be a strong way to talk about it. I did learn a lot from the experience, but learned good things and a lot of things that were hard lessons as well. So one of the records that we recorded, I had reached out to a manager. We had moved on from one manager and I was looking for a new manager. And I reached out to a manager that had managed a group that I really had liked their trajectory and what they had done. And that manager said, you know, well, you'll need to do another album. So why don't you have me produce the album? And then, you know, once we have the album, I can see about shopping it to some record labels. And then if that goes well, maybe I can manage you. That all sounded good at the time. The fees for producing that record were really high for where we were at as a group and, you know, kind of took every penny we could scrounge together from family and friends and everybody kind of coming in to support us in that. And then ultimately, after we finished recording that, it's a good project. It's something I'm proud of. But the producer manager, I don't think liked it, you know.
And even though he produced it.
Which then I realized, oh, well, that's not part of the job. Liking things isn't part of the job, but that's why these things should, at least on the front end, stay separate whenever possible, is that you can hire a producer to make a record and they can do a good job without necessarily liking the record the way it turns out. You know, they can still make a record that you like, even though they might not like it. But then if they're supposed to go represent that record, now there's a problem, right? So
yeah, they better be a little ambitious about it.
Yeah. And I kind of realized, oh, I don't think he's really behind this. I don't think he really likes what we made or is not passionate about it. And so even though per the development deal that we had done, he was supposed to set up meetings with some record labels and things like that. I remember talking with my dad, and who doesn't know anything about the business, but we were just having a conversation. I said, I don't think I want him to be the one to set up those meetings because I don't think he likes the album. And so then we were kind of back to square one, you know, with a project that we had to go and figure out what to do with ourselves. Right. You know? So that was the big lesson. And that was so expensive to do that project that I wanted to, the things that we did learn from that experience were the importance of touring, and he taught us how to tour and how to build some network and community and a lot of songwriting experience from that. So some positive things, but ultimately learned a big lesson of you can't really pay anybody to like your music, you know?
Wow. I love that.
So, yeah.
So you came to Nashville.
Yeah.
And how soon before you got AGD going?
Yeah, well, funny enough, AGD was the name of the company that we had started. Well, it was the air quotes company, you know, that we had started to book our band maybe 6 years beforehand. And so my brother had set up a email that was AGD Entertainment, and he was the booking agent for AGD Entertainment. And this was something that was pretty common back in the early 2000s, you know, to kind of have a fake booking agent that you acted where you were something bigger shot than you were. And now the internet is all knowing. You can see through that pretty quickly.
Yeah,
you know, you exactly. can find out, oh, those credentials don't line up. But so that was the name of the company. So then when I went to my brother, who's vice president and business partner with me, Tim, I said, hey, I think I want to start a management and development company. And he said, well, we already have one. I said, what do you mean? He goes, AGD Entertainment, remember? We used to book all our shows under that. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right, we do. So he was like, we'll just, and so we actually, you know, we kept that company name and made it an actual company at that point. So.
And then here you are.
And here we are. So that was, you know, maybe a year after moving to Nashville, I think, about. I was just really ready. I'd been touring a lot and really ready to kind of be in one place.
So transitioning from that touring musician.
Yep.
Out there looking for a record deal.
Yeah.
And now you're taking another course where you're becoming a manager of, say, or a company that's going to provide some artist direction.
Yeah.
How smooth of a transition was that, and how long did that take to transpire?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing was living in Nashville, my friends that I met that were artists would ask me, hey, how's the band, you know, that we were in, which was called Fight the Quiet? How are you guys making money? How are you doing what you're doing? And so we would go out for beers and I would tell some artists in Nashville kind of everything about CSAC and royalties and TV and film and touring and how to book your own tour and promote your own tour. And they'd go, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. and then multiple times it was, well, hey, could I hire you to do that? And it's like, well, yeah, maybe. Maybe I could think about a way that you could hire me to do that. And that's kind of where that all kind of came from. And then I figured out, really at that point, started writing the 0-60 program. And that was our first offering from the very beginning, was the 0-60 program. So at that time I was still thinking I would pursue a career as an artist and offer this program consulting on the side. And I had recently gotten married and my wife just really, in a very big vote of confidence, but a really good reality check at the same time, said, you know, I really think that you could continue on with your performance career, which I was moving away from the band and I was trying to do something solo and think it kind of toying with that idea.
Right.
And she said, you know, I think your performance career, a solo performance career for you will go really great. And I'm behind you if that's what you want to do. I also think that this artist development program will be really great if that's what you want to do. But I think if you try to do both, one of them's, they're probably both going to fail. So you need to kind of pick one and really put everything that you have behind it. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to pick the one that doesn't have me sleeping in my car. So that's kind of the birth of that. So I think that was probably a year-long transition, probably at that point, of launching the idea, getting the idea going. I had four beta artists go through the program so that I could kind of say, hey, this is a real thing. And then we launched it, you know, to another 10 artists after that. That was about a year.
We're going to take a break, get a word in for one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to have some more conversation with Nathan Doze. And we're going to get into the 0-60 program.
Wonderful.
And kind of explain the details of it and what's all involved.
Hej, det här är Oskar Höglund, VD och grundare på Epidemic Sound. Och du lyssnar på The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Hi everyone, I'm Larry Butler, and I want to send you a free digital copy of my new book, The Singer-Songwriter Rulebook, 101 Ways to Help You Improve Your Chances of Success. That's right, everything you need to know to launch your career as a singer-songwriter, all based on my 40 years in the live performance arena, and believe me, I've seen it all. In my book, you'll find the 10 things you have to deal with before even thinking about becoming a singer-songwriter performer. You'll also learn about the 5 things every singer-songwriter can do this weekend to make their live show better. 5 things I can guarantee that you are not doing already. Plus, there's tips on songwriting and staging, photo and video shoots, publishing, merch, dozens of other topics, all written for people who don't particularly like to read. And again, it's free. Just go to the Business Side of Music website homepage and look for my book cover. Click on it, and a free digital copy of my book will be yours. I'm Larry Butler, and I approve of this message.
Whether you consider yourself a musician or not, music is all around us, and it affects our everyday lives, whether it's background music influencing our shopping habits in a store, organ music adding the vibe to a baseball game, or a playlist convincing us to keep going on that last mile of a run. I'm Mindy Peterson, host of the podcast Enhanced Life with Music, where we take a holistic look at music's benefits through the lens of science and medicine, entertainment, and business. You can find me and Enhanced Life with Music at mpetersonmusic.com/podcast or wherever you get your audio.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Nathan Dose with AGD Entertainment is with us today. Before the break, we started to dip our toe in the water with regards to the 0 to 60 program. Let's break it down
and
take it apart and tell us what it is and what's all involved.
Yeah. So as we started to promote our scholarship for the 0 to 60 program, which we'll talk more about, it really brought me back to the foundational concepts of what the program is. And so for me, I broke down an album release cycle into five pillars. And I did that so that in my mind, when I was writing the program, I wanted a 4 or 5 piece band to be able to execute a really strong release independently by each band member taking responsibility. That ended up being a little bit of a pipe dream to see that function like that, because as anybody in a band knows, level of commitment varies,
right?
And level of skill set varies as well.
From member to member, right?
From member to member, yeah. And I really had to learn very quickly that sometimes the bass player should just be the bass player, you know, not...
That's right. Pick on the bass player.
Well, my brother's the bass player in our band, so it feels right. He picked on... We've picked on each other enough, so the way to go. But so that was the original concept, was these five pillars, thinking that, you know, if each band member takes one of these responsibilities, we can execute efficiently. The five pillars has stuck as the foundational piece of our program. Those five pillars are your day-to-day operations, your publicity, your marketing, your branding, and your performance. And, you know, it's been interesting 7 years of doing this, and I've thought, man, one day things might change so much that I need to change one of these pillars, but it hasn't. It's stayed pretty consistent, that this still wraps up pretty much everything that you're trying to do. Now, the day-to-day tasks obviously change within each of those, but conceptually, we can still hang out in each of those pillars and pretty much get everything done that we need to do.
But don't you consider those pillars really to kind of be the backbone of anything within this business to make it work?
Well,
They
don't really change. And honestly, we haven't explored this. We probably won't, but I've done enough work now with friends outside of the music business that are just launching careers, and there's really, or, you know, launching new product lines or launching new businesses. And they're really, it's pretty much the same over any sort of startup or small business. These are the pillars that make up pretty much a launch. And I think for a lot of artists, they go, hey, performance might not be my big thing. I don't plan on being a big touring artist. Maybe they want to be a songwriter, published songwriter, or something like that. And then the conversation is, well, maybe it's not a tour, but you do have to be activating interest like in real life. So that might be writer's rounds. That might be something else. But for any launch, there needs to be a place where everything coalesces into one place of where you can have the full experience all at once. And for artists, that's the show. That's the, you know, that's the performance. That's the concert, right? Where all the branding, all the music, all the hard work to prepare and all of that comes into one place, and it can all be seen. So,
and it doesn't matter whether it's an arena date or it's a songwriter in the round.
Yeah.
It's still the basic same principle.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, with branding, we've talked a lot about what your image is and creating a brand. And, you know, you have a lot of, you can do a Google search and find a million articles about your brand as an artist and things like that. One of my favorite things to expand on in that is not only your own brand, but your partnerships and the possibility of brand partnerships. So that's a major focus for us, is creating a brand identity for the purpose of creating partnerships. So the stronger brand that you have, the easier it is to find the kind of partners that you need for reaching the audience. Marketing, I like to joke, not joke, but kind of my way of differentiating between publicity and marketing is that marketing is the way that you talk about yourself as an artist, and publicity is the way that you want others to talk about you. And so we separate those two of saying, hey, how are you getting other people to certify, you know, publicity is about getting other people to certify, hey, you have a good thing going on here that's worth talking about and worth sharing. And then marketing is, hey, here's what I have going on. You should participate with some sort of call to action. And then outside of those four pillars, you have the day-to-day operations that is revenue, paperwork, and your kind of general business stuff. And then ultimately for that is your primary scheduling and communications. So within those, we've been able to create a 350 task plus or minus, depending the project, task list that the artist then executes.
Is this something like bullet points, or is it a checklist that they need to go down? And is it pretty detailed for them, or do they need to fill in a lot of the blanks?
So we have the five pillars that are the foundational piece. Within those pillars, we go through six phases for each pillar. So the first phase is discovery, and that's where we really dig in and say, hey, who are you? And what's the point of all this? What's the story? Why are we doing this? After we have discovery very clear, we go into setup, where we do all the setup tasks that are necessary. So that's writing copy for socials, that's press releases, you know, any number of email drafts, pitch plans, tour routes, etc. Once we have everything set up, we move into activation, which is the transitional period from when you're pitching and sending your music is going into the world, but it's not yet released, which is a big missed opportunity for a lot of artists understanding the activation period from when I send my music to Spotify or Apple Music to when it actually needs to be released and all of the things that need to happen.
Because there is quite a bit of setup involved there.
Yeah, and a lot of things that need to happen on a clock in order to be most effective. And these are things that are not creative in nature. They are technical in nature.
Yeah, more administrative.
Yeah. And it's
that's
the
not
same.
A real long clock. That's kind of a short time frame, right?
It can be. Yeah. It just kind of depends on, it happens very quickly, but it's really 6 to 8 weeks of a period of time of lead time that you need to be having for everything to happen. So once you move out of activation and you're in your release, you're into the release portion of the campaign. And then we have what we call cycle, which is another undervalued phase of a creative project, which is everything that happens after the release to make sure that the release stays relevant and has a full life cycle. And then my favorite, and most people's favorite, our last phase is called vacation, where we really want to encourage the artist to take some time to refresh and reload and to plan that time so that it's not burnout, because so many artists burn out. So through those six phases, we're able to set up, we've got the five pillars across the top, and we've got the six phases as we go down, and we're able to pop in and look at where an artist is at in their campaign and know kind of exactly what's going on. So yeah, the tasks are pretty micro taskless. When you say detailed, I think the important part is that we keep them to basic functions. These are things that anybody can do on their own. It doesn't take a high level of industry knowledge or professional skill set. And then ultimately, they don't have any creative opinion in them. They are non-genre specific. These are basic things that every artist has to do. And how they do them is where the creativity comes in.
And I'm assuming everything's kind of in a certain order, too.
Yeah, relatively. Yeah. Now, all the artists, the thing that I knew in launching this program, and I was actually online and I saw somebody, you know, that works in artists coaching, you know, a colleague say, oh, you know, a lot of times what artists need isn't what they want to hear. And I said, well, the trick is in artist development is to try and give them what they need and what they want at the same time. And so from the very beginning, we said, what do artists want? And they want a person. They want a manager, right?
Right.
Ultimately, they want help. You know, we can poke fun at the artist who just wants to be creative and have everybody else do the work. And we like to make that, you know, assumption about artists. But really, that's an unfair assumption because usually artists are very happy to do the work. They just want help and they really want to know that they're just doing the right things. So when you say these are the things that you need to do and you confidently say that, they go, all right, I'm ready to do it. And they're happy to do it. And then they may just need help because of time constraints. So that's where we said, all right, we're going to provide what artists want. We're going to give them a person that's their artist coach that guides them through this thing. So no artist can go through this program without working with a coach. They're always paired with a coach, one-on-one. And then we have help available to them. So they're able to get one of our team members to help them with tasks if they are in a situation where they might not have the time. Maybe they work a day job or something like that that takes up their time. They can have our team help them with that. So we said, that's what they want. Let's give them what they want. What do they need? Well, they need education. They need accountability. And honestly, they need encouragement. And if we can do that, then they'll be getting what they want and what they need.
We're going to take another break, get a word in for another one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to have some more conversation with Nathan Dose.
Hey, this is Oscar Höglund. I am the CEO and the co-founder of Epidemic Sound, and you are listening to The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
What does it take to succeed in country music? Hi, this is Candy O'Terry, your host for Country Music Success Stories.
And this is JC Don Valeris, your Music City mentor. Our Nashville-based podcast takes you into the homes and onto the back porches of country music icons.
And the stories they tell us just might inspire you to make your country music success story come true.
Check out Country Music Success Stories on your favorite podcast platform
and subscribe today.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Nathan Dose is with us. We've been talking about your company. We've been talking about 0 to 60,
yeah,
and the pillars. Let's talk about what I think is equally, if not more important, and that's the scholarship program,
yeah,
for developing artists. Let's dig into that.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, as I had said earlier on, the motivation for this was for starting the 0 to 60 program was I had artists asking to hire me to teach them how to do some things or show them how to do some things or to just do things for them. And so we came up with a pay for program that one of the goals was to be very affordable. So I met with a lot of people in town and I said, hey, what is management consulting? What are the rates that people are paying for management consulting? And what would be a way to offer that service, but more affordably and more efficiently so that a younger demographic and an artist without a lot of financial support could actually afford that. So we're very proud that our 0 to 60 program is one of the more affordable one-on-one coaching services in the industry. We're actually at about 50% market value as our just regular price. So we're really proud of that. But there's still a large population of artists who, even though our program is very affordable, would still never be able to afford to hire a coach, much less to create the kind of content that is needed to get the attention that they need as an artist. And so I've known that, you know, you do a strategy session with an artist and they go, oh, this would be so great. This is everything that I need. But my financial situation just does not allow me to do something like this. And I've heard that story year after year after year from artists that we've met with. And especially for young artists, the 16 to 20 year old demographic, that's such an important time that they have dreams and goals of being artists and they have talent, right? They're developing talent. They have a voice. They have something to say. They're, you know, they're viewing the world in a light that I honestly feel we all need. We need to hear from the youth of how they see the world and what they think about the world, and especially from an artistic point of view. It benefits us so, so much. And so that's where I said, well, we have to find a way to be able to serve that group of artists. And so I've wanted to do the scholarship for many years. There were a lot of questions around what to do after the artists had gone through our program on a scholarship. And so there were some things that we wanted to get in place in our company before we did that, so that if an artist comes through on scholarship, we have somewhere to take them after the fact. And that was one of the mm-hmm. biggest things that we wanted to get in place. And so, you know, that looks a lot like having the ability to do label deals or publishing deals with artists after they go through the program. And so that was something that we needed to sort out before we offered the program. And then we needed to figure out what, you know, what our goals were for the scholarship. And so I was able to bring on a great team to work on the scholarship. We started mid-pandemic. I said, you know, I think the pandemic taught us a lot about being in the moment, that everything can change overnight. So don't wait for some perfect time right. to come along, because it's not coming. You know, we only have right now, and everything could change tomorrow. So that really motivated me towards, let's do this and do it now. And so my brother and I decided to really pull the trigger, and we have a lot of vision for the scholarship. Right now, we'll be offering a full ride scholarship, which will include support in producing the masters for a release and all of the visual content needed to promote that release. And then the artist will go through our 0-60 program with a coach through the full program. And that's all full ride for one artist. And then we'll have two partial scholarships that will include just the coaching for an artist who has been able to make their masters and has the ability to create their own visual content, but just needs that coaching support and wouldn't be able to afford it otherwise.
How does someone qualify to get on that scholarship list?
Yeah. AGDentertainment.com/scholarship has the application. So
is there certain criteria that they need to investigate into to maybe help them qualify, or?
Yeah. It's really a matter of, there will be the application process and an interview process. So we are hoping to find somebody that has spent the time developing their talent to a place of impressionable talent.
And is it genre specific?
It's not.
Okay.
No. So that part's exciting. Our company is capable of working with any genre. You know, we have 40 artists in the program right now, all different genres, from, you know, metal bands to hip hop groups to, you know, contemporary Christian. It's all over the place. And we're very proud of that. So for this scholarship, it's really about somebody that has spent the time developing their talent, but does not come from a place of financial means. So we're a small company, we're a startup company, so that we're not able to do the kind of financial background checks or any type of thing like that. So it's really just a matter of somebody telling us their story and telling us why this would make a difference for them.
It just needs to be compelling enough.
Compelling. Yeah. A compelling story as to, you know, why they believe they're the right person for this scholarship. And hearing the stories from the program directors that we're talking to with our partner Notes for Notes. Notes for Notes is a group that goes into boys and girls clubs and puts in recording studios, and then they have program directors that teach the kids how to record and make music. So they're a perfect partner for us because they're really living and breathing the creative, and we can come in and support those artists in their release plans. So Notes for Notes and the program directors have shared a lot of really great, compelling stories, and we're excited to see the applications as they come in for the scholarship and see who our artist is going
to
be.
Do you have a set number of who you're looking for to fill these scholarships, or is it going to be kind of be on an as needed basis? Or
For this first scholarship, we'll do one full ride and two partial. We have three artist coaches on our roster right now. So each coach will have a scholarship client on their roster. And so we intend to grow our coaching roster to 10 over the next year and a half. By the end of 2022, we hope to be at 10 coaches. And so then we hope to be able to do 10 scholarships at that time. So,
and they don't have to be based in Nashville, which is where we're at. It can be anywhere.
They can be anywhere.
Yeah. And then, once again, how do they find out about this, filling out the paperwork, that the application?
The application's at agdentertainment.com/scholarship. It's a big application, so you know they really want to make a plan to sit down and fill it out thoroughly and spend some time on it, because that's going to be the first impression for myself and our director for the scholarship, who will be going through all of the applications. So, and then from there, you know, the application's going to say that compelling story. And then from there, it'll be about the talent.
And it's anyone 16 to 20.
Yeah. The target range is 16 to 20. We've had a couple of questions that, you know, how hard that age group is. And I'm not sure that there's any reason why, you know, that's our target. So if we had somebody that would be, you know, either maybe coming into that age bracket during the course of the campaign or leaving that age bracket, that's not a disqualifier or anything like that. So that's just our target range.
Very good.
Yeah.
Nathan, thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is great.
Glad to talk about it. So we're very excited.
The Business Side of Music is the creation of Tom Sabella and Tracy Snow and is produced by Bob Bender. The Business Side of Music is recorded at Music Dog Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. Production sound designed by Keith Stark. Voiceover and promo by Lisa Fusine.
Sometimes you need to be healed. Sometimes it takes an earthquake to shake loose the things that you feel. It's easy to take love for granted, get stuck in a rut unfulfilled. And sometimes it takes an earthquake to tear down these walls that we build. It takes an earthquake or a tidal wave or a landslide for a heart to be saved. Oh my darlings, it takes an earthquake. And sometimes you need to be tough. Sometimes it takes an earthquake
to tell us enough is enough. Our changes can make us or break us. We all have a choice, I suppose. But sometimes it takes an earthquake to tell us it's time to let go. It takes an earthquake or a tidal wave. It takes an earthquake sometimes. And an earthquake will shake your foundation and rattle the bedrock below. Baby, make no mistake, the strongest hearts break. That's what it takes us. Or turns our poor hearts into stone. But sometimes I pray for an earthquake to show us the way to go home. People, it takes an earthquake or a tidal wave or a landslide. It takes an earthquake sometimes.
You still here? It's over. Go home. Go.